Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful, cloudy, misty Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'll be with you for the next hour talking about what's going on in the news, in our world, both for, around health and the environment. And I also have a guest joining me today, Randy Dresner, who is the president and CEO of Island Harvest. She's an incredible powerhouse woman, and I'm so excited to have her on and share the work of Island Harvest with all of you. So that will be coming on in a little bit. But, of course, I also have a recipe to share with you, and I want to share with you some things that are going on in and around the New York area. Those of you that live in other parts of the country, there are many things going on in newer areas in the same around the same issues, like Terra Madre Day, which is December 10th, has events going on around the country. My Slow Food chapter is not actually doing anything, but there are other events going on. You can go to slowfoodusa.org website and find out where there might be a Terra Madre event close to your home. December 4th through 6th, this weekend, is the Young Farmers Conference at Stone Barns. I've been talking about that for many weeks. And Stone Barns is an incredible agricultural learning center, and this is a wonderful time for beginning farmers to come together with more seasoned farmers and really network and learn about the business of farming. And we need all of you farmers out there. So if you are thinking about farming and haven't done it yet, this might be a good place to come and find an internship or something like that. Also, today is a big event out at Hofstra University. It's a debate on GMOs. It's really about whether the U.S. needs to regulate GMOs more than they have been doing. And it will take place from 4:30 to 6 at Hofstra University. And I will be one of the panelists in the debate. So if you can make it, love to see you there. Also, tonight is a Small Planet Funds Gala, which is a fun event. If you're not coming to the debate and you're in the city, actually it's from 7 to 10. And it's at a private residence, so you need to go to the Small Planet Funds website to find out locations and to buy tickets through brown paper tickets. Also, December 7th is the Citizens Climate Lobby monthly meeting, and that happens out on the island in Shirley. And if you're interested in that, go to the website of Citizens Climate Lobby and join that. And also, January 8th is a big rally that's going to take place in Albany to let Governor Cuomo know that we do not want fracking in New York. And we are organizing buses from the Long Island area, and there's also buses going from the city and other parts of the state to meet in Albany for this very, very big, important rally. So if you can make it, if you're interested in signing up for a bus, we're organizing it with Food and Water Watch. So you can go to their website and find out more information about that. There's lots of things also that I would like to ask all of you to do. Many of you know that I, every year for the past 20 years, have been partnering with the River Fund New York Food Pantry in bringing a huge Thanksgiving feast to the needy out in Rufus King Park, Jamaica, Queens. And this year, we served almost 600 people in the park, plus sent food to hundreds of others and homeless shelters around the city. And it's a great event, and yet at the same time, it's really so disheartening to see how the lines have been growing, and especially with the cutbacks in SNAP that have just happened. It's really a very, very serious situation out there. Hunger in America is really on the rise. It's something that we had tackled back in the 1970s, and we really seem to have had it pretty under control. And then with all the cuts over the last bunch of years, it really took a back seat. And we need all of you out there to pick up the phone and call your senators and congressmen. Let them know that you do not want the cuts into the SNAP program. And they're all discussing and debating this farm bill, and that's where the SNAP funding comes from. And so there's a toll-free number I'm going to give all of you right now, and I'm going to ask you all to call this toll-free number. You'll be connected to your representative, and let them know that you are calling about the Farm Bill and that you want to urge them to support and protect the SNAP program in any Farm Bill that they pass. And the number is 1-888-398-8702. And call that number. First, you can be talking to your representatives, and then you can listen to the recording, and you can press 2, and you'll be connected to your senator. And then you can press 3, and you'll be connected to your other senator. So it's really a great, great call-in number. But we need to protect the SNAP program. I mean, just seeing the increase in lines just from last year to this year. And last year was huge because of Hurricane Sandy, and this year was even bigger. So we all need to help feed our hungry. And it really, you know, it's really ridiculous that a country like ours is depending on charity and goodwill from, you know, social ministries and things like that to feed our hungry. It should not be. It should be something that is a right as an American. And especially so many of these homeless people or hungry people are people that are working full-time jobs, but the pay of minimum wage is so low that they still can't make ends meet. And with seniors, they have to choose between food or medications. So it's really a bad situation. So that's a way that all of you can help. Also, as I said, I'm participating in this debate later on this afternoon on genetically modified foods. And right now, the U.S. Department of Agriculture is getting ready to approve the first genetically engineered apple. And the purpose of it is that it won't brown after it's cut. However, there's no testing, and our government does not require testing to make sure that these things are safe before they put them on the market. And that's all the inroads that companies like Monsanto has in our government. And we really need to let the USDA know that we do not want this Franken apple. You know, same thing's going on with the Franken salmon and all these other foods. So there's a petition on my website. If you go to iegreen.com, under Take Action, there's a petition. Also, that phone number I just gave you is also there. Please, you know, take these issues up. They are really, really important. A petition you'll find on my website has to do with the bees. As all of you know, bees have been in decline, and they have figured out that it's the heavy-duty pesticides that we're using, especially the neocontinoids. And in many European countries, this pesticide has now been banned, and our country is saying that it will be at least 5 years before they review it and ban it. And we don't really have that much time. One out of every three foods that we eat in, you know, the world, or I should say one out of every three bites of food we eat, have been pollinated by bees. 71 of the 100 crops that make up 90% of the world's food supply are pollinated by bees. And we really need to protect them. That's why, you know, I got two beehives this year, and hopefully next year we'll expand that. But anybody who is in a position to raise bees, give that a try, especially if you keep your property free of pesticides. They'll have a good chance of surviving. And we need to let Congress and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency know that we want to ban these pesticides. Good news is I was really, really happy to see in the New York Times on Tuesday, that schools are banding together, some of the largest school districts in the country. I know Miami, New York City, San Francisco, Chicago, Dallas, Los Angeles. They're banding together and are going to use their purchasing power to bring healthier food into the schools, but also to get rid of all the styrofoam that they produce and buy the plates that are made from sugar. And so that's really, really exciting. I mean, I remember being shocked when I went into some schools over the last couple of years and saw that the kids are eating directly on styrofoam trays. They don't even get plates. They like scoop the food right onto the styrofoam tray, and that's what the kids eat off of. And it was just disgusting, and then they throw that out. And so this will make such a big difference. I think that what they came up with a number like 270 million plates a year will be replaced with these compostable plates. And it's really an exciting thing. So if you want to read it, that's in the New York Times. Just look up Urban Schools Aim for Environmental Revolution, also on my website. But then some sad news is the Obama administration, President Obama, has now approved a pipeline. It's not the tar sands pipeline, but it's a pipeline just as bad that's going to go from Illinois through Alberta, bringing them diluting gas from the fracking industry. And, you know, not only is this project going to cost millions and millions of dollars, the chances of the pipelines bursting and breaking and polluting our environment are almost guaranteed. So I don't know if there's anything that we can do about it other than, you know, put more pressure on the tar sands pipeline and, you know, let the Obama administration know that we do not want that. So all those things are so important. I really hope you take a look at my website, some of those petitions, and please get involved, and please call your congressman, and, you know, let them know that we want to support the SNAP program in the new farm bill. Okay, so now I want to share with you this week's recipe is a gluten-free granola. The only thing that makes it gluten-free as opposed to a regular granola is that I'm using gluten-free oats. If gluten-free is not an issue for you, you can certainly just use regular oats, and then it's regular granola. But granola is so easy to make, and it's so delicious, and it's so expensive to buy a good organic granola, that this is really not only delicious, but it's cost savings and it's fresher. So the ingredients are a quarter cup of safflower oil or coconut oil, a half a cup of maple syrup, 1 teaspoon salt, 1 tablespoon vanilla, 1 cup of almonds, 1 cup of pecans, 6 cups of gluten-free oats, half a cup of walnuts, half a cup of sunflower seeds, half a cup of pumpkin seeds, half a cup of coconut, and half a cup of organic raisins and our dried cranberries. And know, as I say all the time, when you're the chef, you get to pick. If you don't like nuts, you leave the nuts out. If you don't like coconut, you leave that out. All of this is flexible. So if you're also using what you have in your house, use what you have in your house. You can certainly put in different nuts and or seeds, whatever you have. When it comes to the dried fruit, I use raisins and cranberries sometimes. But the cranberries and the raisins I add after I do the baking so that the raisins and cranberries don't dry out anymore. So that's the only trick I want to share with you. So the first thing you want to do is in a small saucepan, you can warm the oil, the syrup, and the salt. Then add the vanilla and stir it up. Now, if you're using sunflower oil, that's already in a liquid form, and you really don't even have to warm it up. You can just mix the sunflower oil, the syrup, and the salt together and add the vanilla. Either way, you're heating up the coconut oil just to make it into a liquid form. Then you mix all the ingredients together with the wet ingredients, except for the raisins and cranberries, in a large bowl. Mix that up, and then you're going to lay it out on a cookie sheet. Line the cookie sheet with parchment paper, then lay out the granola, and you're going to bake it in a preheated oven only at 325 degrees for about 30 minutes. But check. Usually ovens don't burn evenly, and so very often the back of the oven is a little hotter and the corners start burning. So you're baking it for about 30 minutes, but halfway through, check and maybe turn the baking sheet around so that it cooks more evenly. And then remove it from the oven, add the raisins and the cranberries, and let the granola cool before storing it into a jar. I like storing it in a glass jar if you have the choice. And that's it. As you can see, it's super simple, very flexible. Make it the way that you like it. Of course, this goes without saying, try to buy all your ingredients organic. That's your protection from not only genetically modified ingredients, but also it's just going to be pesticide and free of herbicides. So that's my tip for you. I hope you all enjoy it. And now it is my pleasure to introduce to you my guest today, Randy Dresner. As I said, she's the president and CEO of Island Harvest, which is the largest food hunger relief organization on Long Island. And Randy has been with them since 2001. And before joining Island Harvest, she worked at the National Center for Disability Services in Nassau County and the Nassau County Chapter of Multiple Sclerosis. But she's been at this, at the Island Harvest for many years, and she has taken it from an organization that fed 2.1 million meals to an organization that now feeds over 9 million meals in just the few years that she's been there. Not few years, many years. Randy, are you with me?
I am.
Welcome. Yeah. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it very much.
Sure. Well, it's a great time because, as I had said at the beginning, this week I, you know, fed the homeless for Thanksgiving, and I saw how the lines have been growing, and the cuts in SNAP have been, you know, in the news and, you know, in, you know, our work. We've been talking about it for a long time. And it's just dreadful, you know, that we saw that movie that Island Harvest sponsored, you know, Place at the Table last month at the Cinema Arts Center, and that talked about hunger in America. So it's just mind-boggling. But before we get into all of that, I want to ask you to just share a little bit about the history behind Island Harvest and the founder, Linda Brightstone. Is that how you say your name?
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Sure. Linda, in 1992... had a friend who came to her to tell her that he had noticed that the 7-Eleven in their town in Rockville Center, right here on Long Island, had been throwing away sandwiches at the end of the day. And that disturbed her very much. And she went up to the manager at that 7-Eleven and asked him if there would be a way that he could give that food to people who need it. She knew that there were groups that were helping people who were in need, and thought that maybe he could give the sandwiches to her, to those organizations. And he said, look, I, you know, it sounds great, but, you know, what if somebody got sick? I don't want to be responsible for that, and how would I get it there anyway? And so she was very frustrated by the conversation, but felt that she was determined and went home, did a lot of research, and went back to him shortly after and said, look, there are laws on the books that protect people who move food in good faith, so you would be protected through the Good Samaritan law, and I'll take the food for you. And she, in that time, had learned about a safe house for women and children that was right nearby, and thought that they may be a good group to give the food to. So she picked up the sandwiches. He said, okay, and she brought it to that safe house. And as she was leaving, some of the women stopped her at the door and said to her, will you come back? And she said she knew at that moment that this was going to have to become something that she would do for more than just one trip. And over time, she got more 7-Elevens involved, and then the program expanded, and she was involved with some country clubs, and more people were interested in working with her and getting involved, and she was having meetings around her kitchen table to make plans for what we call still food runs.
Uh-huh.
And the organization grew, and it wasn't really an organization at that point. She was working with the county seat Kiwanis organization in Mineola, and they were providing lots of volunteers, and she was working also with the a couple of other organizations. And then she met someone who was the head of what was then EAB Bank. His name is Ed Trevianti, and he's still a good friend of Island Harvest. And he said, Linda, you can't do this like this. You can't be sitting around your kitchen table, and you can't be driving in your station wagon with a cooler in the back. So he gave us, through EAB Bank at the time, our first grant, which helped buy a vehicle. And also he gave her office space, which is, we still occupy the space in Mineola. It's completely donated, the space and the all the utilities. And as EAB became Citibank, Citibank believed in us as well, and so they are our landlords. And so we're there 21 years later, we're still there. And through that whole process, Ed helped her to learn how to become an official organization. And so at that point, she created a board and became an official 501c3 organization. And then we
grew. When was that? When was that?
Well, that actually all happened in about 92, 93. And so we've been around since then. It's about 21 years that we've been around and growing. And now food rescue is still work that we do, but it's small. It's a small portion of our work. I call it our legacy work. We'll never give it up, but it's a small portion of what we do. We are really a food bank that uses and works with food rescue. And so we rescue food still from 7-Elevens, but we have other accounts, Panera Bread. We rescue product from every one of their cafes on Long Island, Red Lobster and Olive Garden and a number of other national companies as well. And then most of our product in our food banking work comes from other sources. We get a tremendous amount of product, nearly 3 million pounds donated from the farmers, from the Long Island Farm Bureau.
Really?
Just about every supermarket supports Island Harvest and donates product to us. And some wholesalers and distributors and companies even like Target and Walmart and Walgreens and CVS donate a lot of product to us as well. And then through our connection with Feeding America, we source a lot of product that way too. So we're now very diversified in how our food comes in and where it comes from.
Mm-hmm. How many people work with the organization?
Well, we have about 39 people on staff. Of those 39 people, I have three people who are Vista AmeriCorps people. So they're volunteers to us and employed through AmeriCorps, and they're placed with us for a year. And this is our third year of the program, but they come to us as employees for the year, so they're included in that number. I also have probably two what we call full-time volunteers. They're working with us 3 and 4 days a week, and they have very specific roles, and so they're working with us. And then we have a core of close to 6,000 volunteers, of which probably 50% of them are active. And so every week we probably have 300 or 400 volunteers that are doing something for Island Harvest. Could be that they're doing food rescue runs, mm-hmm. picking up food and moving it. They're working in our office, helping with phones, data entry, or they're doing pro bono services, so they may be attorneys or marketing people or other professionals who are giving us some support in some way, shape, or form.
Uh-huh. Wow, that's amazing.
Because
you really started where you were just, you know, as you said, the food rescue, the little mm-hmm. bits here and there. And also, mm-hmm. I remember, I know from at my synagogue, Island Harvest was recommended to come pick up after bar mitzvahs and
mm-hmm.
things like that. Do
mm-hmm.
you still do that?
Yeah, that's the food rescue work that we still
yeah.
do. So we do it from those other accounts, if you will, but we do it from functions that are supervised by a commercial food vendor, someone who's trained in food safety, and they've been hired. So that's why we could take food from a bar mitzvah or a corporate event. It's also food that's not presented. It's food that's been prepared and is usually in the restaurant waiting to be presented. We can't rescue food that's already been out on a buffet, for example.
Right.
So we encourage a lot of the corporate caterers to not overfill their buffets so that they don't waste that product.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, that's great.
Yeah, wonderful stuff.
And how long have you been with Island Harvest?
I am in with this organization for almost 13 years, 12 and a half years. been a lot of fun.
Yeah, and you've really seen the growth since you've been there.
I've been honored to have been here for all of these years and work with really fabulous staff people and board members and volunteers. And so together we have grown this organization, yes.
Now, but you're not a food pantry, right? You're a food bank?
No, we supply. You could sort of look at us as sort of the wholesaler, and the food pantries and the soup kitchens are the retailers. Mm-hmm. So we supply them. We
right.
do have a food pantry so that if somebody in the community needs some help, they could come to us on a one-time basis, and we would give them product and then refer them to a food pantry in the community. But as a food bank, we supply them.
Mm-hmm. And are food pantries open to everyone, or do you need to sign up and be registered in that community to get food from a food pantry, or can anyone who's hungry go?
It depends. There are two different types. So some are open, some are closed. So in an open situation, they would allow people from the community to come in and access their food, and then there are some closed food pantries. So, for example, if it's a school and they have a food pantry on site, they can have people from the community coming through their facility. So it's open for the community of people that are a part of that school.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are different types.
Uh-huh. And do you have a list of food pantries if there are people listening to this show or people that know people that are hungry? Where do people go to find out where food pantries are?
On our website, islandharvest.org, O-R-G, there's a section where it says how to get help. We have a listing of food pantries and we have a listing of soup kitchens. And on that listing there are information such as the name of it, the address, a contact person, a phone number, and then the hours that they're usually open. But we always tell people to call because their hours may have changed and we may not have been alerted to it. And so we refer people to that listing on our website if they call us or email us, and we would encourage people in the community to do the same.
Mm-hmm. Wow. You know, one thing from the movie that we saw, Hunger in America, or A Place at the Table.
Place at the Table, uh-huh.
You know, they talked about how so many of kids, and people don't really realize this, I mean, the face of hunger is not, you know, just the homeless person out in the street. I mean, it could be your next-door neighbor who's lost their job and their family still is living in an upscale neighborhood and they are trying to make ends meet. Or, you know, so many children and single moms and seniors are hungry. For kids who depend on the school lunch program for their meals, what kind of program do you have in place to help them on the weekends when they don't have the school or in the summers?
Here at Island Harvest, we created a program that we call Combating Childhood Hunger a number of years ago, and we've created four different programs to help children who unfortunately know hunger firsthand. So the first one is a weekend backpack feeding program, and I'll describe that one to you in a little bit, but it's where we, very briefly, where we work with some schools and we get food to the children so that they can eat over the weekend. The second program is a summer feeding program so that we can work with summer programs that have children coming to them, but they know that those children just don't have access to food and to bring food to the summer program to eat lunch. We have another program, which is Fresh Fruits and Vegetable Program. These are all funded programs by private grants, and we are bringing fresh fruits and vegetables to children's programs and combining it with an education program so that we can introduce those kind of important products to children. And then the last program is one that I call Nutrition for the Soul. The others are obviously nutrition for their body. But we work with a company called Love and Quiches, which is a company that makes dessert products, and I think they still do quiches, actually. They've been donating to Island Harvest for years, and they came to us a number of years ago and said, look, you know, we know what you do, and we know how important the work is, and we know that you support children who are in need, but we're concerned also about the children who live in poverty who probably never get to celebrate their birthday. And so they came up with a program called Cakes for Kids, and they donate cakes to Island Harvest so that we can have volunteers deliver it to children's programs so that children can celebrate their birthday.
And I call that
Cakes for Kids. I call that Nutrition for the Soul because, in my mind, to give an opportunity for a child to celebrate their birthday is giving them a chance to celebrate themselves. And do that in a semi-public forum with their other kids in their classroom or their summer program. So it's a really, really wonderful program, and we're so proud to be working with Love and Keisha's on that project. And I think we're into our third year on that program. So that's the compendium of programs that we have for children. And from the first one that I talked about, the weekend backpack feeding program, last school year, we distributed over 200 meals for children during the school year who are a part of this program. We have 1,600, almost 1,700 children that are participating in the program at 24 schools across Long Island. These are schools and children that have been identified as having living in poverty or above the poverty line and or below the poverty line, forgive me.
But 24 schools, I heard 200 meals? I must have
200 meals, right. Well, we feed the children. What we do is we deliver packages on Thursdays with volunteers and staff on Thursdays. And those packages are 4 meals each. And the children take those on Friday. They go into a special room and discreetly get that package, shove it in their backpack, and take it home with them. They go back to class and then take it home with them on Fridays. And they get those 4 meals. It's 2 breakfasts, 2 lunches, and snacks, and juice, and shelf-stable milk, and whatnot. And we
so
do that
stuff that
the
doesn't
whole
need refrigeration?
Year. It's shelf-stable, right?
Uh-huh.
Shelf-stable. And this is a program that's supported by private contributions. And the program is as large as our contributions come in. So that's we're feeding almost 1,700 children. We would feed 50,000 children if we got that kind of funding to support the program. Hopefully we're going to each year continue to grow the program so we can include more children in this program. But the sad thing, other than the fact that we have to have this program and feed children who don't have access to food over the weekend, and some of that is because their parents are working 2 and 3 jobs,
mm-hmm.
and they're just not home, and also because they just can't afford it. But this past June, we were called into one of our schools in Westbury who has 90 children enrolled in our program, and they wanted to thank us. So they had 10 of those children prepare letters for us so that they could have a program presentation and thank us. And the children stayed. They were fourth graders, and they stood up in front of the classroom. We were there, and they read these letters that, had I known, I would have brought a box of tissues and a video camera. I didn't know. And so I was completely unprepared. I used my sleeve and tried to remember as much as possible. But the letters, I could repeat 2 of the letters because they were so touching.
Please do.
One said, "Dear Island Harvest, thank you so much for the food you deliver on Fridays. It helps my family so much, especially my brother Eric, who has cancer." That was powerful.
Yeah.
The next letter said, "Dear Island Harvest, thank you so much for the food that we get on Fridays. While we were living in the motel, that was all the food that we had over the weekend." And another letter spoke about how the whole family is eating the food. And that's
right, that you were giving for one child.
Yep, and that's the point that became very poignant for us after this presentation, that this program is no longer supporting just a child. It's in many, many, many cases, it's supporting the whole family. And it's only 4 meals, but they're splitting it up. And so it really speaks to the importance of this program and how we need to continue this, and we need to continue to grow the program.
Yeah.
And this
yeah.
just speaks to one aspect of hunger on Long Island. You know, there's hunger with veterans and military families. You know, people are serving overseas, and their families are struggling, and they can't feed their families completely. And then other...
That's the Operation Hope program?
Operation Hope, yep.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about that, but before we do, we're going to take a couple-minute break.
Mm-hmm.
And when we come back, I really want to hear about that program because it looked really special on your website.
Great.
So, everyone, don't go anywhere. I've been talking with Randy Dresner, President and CEO of Island Harvest, and you're listening to Bhavani and I.E. Green on the Progressive Radio Network. We'll be right back. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at I.E. Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm here with my guest today, Randy Dresner, President and CEO of Island Harvest, a local food who distributes more food on Long Island to the food pantries than any other organization. Randy, are you with me?
I am.
So before we took the break, we were just about to talk about Operation Hope. Can you share with us what that is?
Operation Hope is a mobile food pantry for veterans and military families. And, you know, when we first started to talk about this program, we found out that Long Island is home to more veterans than almost any other place in the country, second only to San Diego.
Really?
And we learned that there are many, 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 many veterans who are struggling and just don't have income, are struggling to find employment, and therefore are struggling with hunger and other poverty issues. So with funding, we came up with Operation Hope, which is a mobile food pantry. And we designed the program so that it would be this mobile food pantry would be driven by a veteran, hopefully a volunteer. And we would take hope packages to veterans and military families. And we go out a couple of times a week. And through the connection that a veteran driver has, they can have a different kind of conversation with the vet we're visiting to support and help, because there's a trust issue there. You know, if I was driving that vehicle and I showed up and rang the bell, and obviously it's prearranged, but they don't know who I am. There's no commonality that I have, and so beyond taking that food and product, they may not open up and tell me anything else, and so therefore we wouldn't really be able to help them.
Right.
But because somebody else is going who's a vet, they can open up a dialogue, and so we really turned it into a good, strong referral program where we can help veterans and give them that bridge to whatever services they need.
Mm-hmm.
And a great example of it is just 2 or 3 weeks ago, one of our volunteer vets took the vehicle out, and he went to 3 different locations. The first veteran that he visited had just been visited by somebody who came to repossess his car. The next house he went to, they had that day gotten a phone call from the electric company that their electricity and heat was going to be cut off. And then the third house he went to, there were some medical issues. But because we were there, because we were able to have that kind of peer-to-peer kind of relationship, we were able to make really strong referrals to help those veterans get the other services that they need in addition to giving them the food and product that we give them.
Right.
So that's just a very important program that we have and very powerful for us.
Uh-huh. Now, I would think the mobile food program would also benefit people that are disabled or seniors who can't get out to the food pantry. Do you have any provisions for those people?
We do. We have a second mobile food. We have a whole mobile food pantry program. So the other part of it is that we have another mobile food pantry that goes to very specific senior citizen communities. And we go every week to the same communities, and we go to 5 different stops. And we bring fresh fruits and vegetables and canned foods. And every time we go out for the seniors and for people with disabilities, We also bring another community partner with us. So it's another nonprofit organization that has some sort of specialty and a service that they provide that can help these seniors and people with disabilities. And so that's how we provide holistic services for them.
But the mobile food pantry, does it go to the individual's house or it goes to a location
it goes
in
to
a community and then they have to get there?
Yep, it's a community development. It's like a senior housing development that we go
mm-hmm.
to.
Mm-hmm.
So they're living there in the development on site, and we go to the community room and we set up.
Okay,
there.
And so there's someone in that community mm-hmm. who could help get food to
yeah.
someone who can't make it there.
That was a requirement for how we selected the site. So we needed somebody on site who could help us make sure that there was a room available, make sure that seniors who couldn't bring the product even back to their apartments had the ability to get it back. Plus, that person also sends out notices ahead of time letting them know which community partner we're bringing with us that week so that they could be prepared for it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So a good example of that partnership is when we bring, let's say, the National Suffolk Law Services organization with us, we could give the seniors food, and they provide an elder law attorney who can meet one-on-one with the seniors. And so those are, that's one example of the many services that we provide in partnership through that program.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, because I was just, I was thinking about it last week when I was feeding the needy in Rufus King Park, and we go actually out into the park, and we're feeding, we've cooked 100 turkeys and, hundreds of pounds of potatoes and everything. We're feeding everybody. And the River Fund food pantry that we work with,
mm-hmm.
They bring a mobile food pantry every other week to this park.
Right.
And so, people are waiting online for hours. And they have their wheeling carts and they're getting frozen chicken and they're getting, boxes of cereal and all this food pantry stuff in addition to the food we're giving them. And they're so boggled down with all the groceries that they're taking home or wherever their home is. And I'm thinking, what about the people that can't do that? I mean, you have to be somewhat physically fit. I mean, we had to help a lot of people,
right.
With
right.
their plates and everything because they just couldn't juggle everything.
It's funny. I was just talking to somebody last night who was a part of that program.
Oh, really?
Who volunteered. Yeah, it's really funny.
Oh, good.
The River Fund program. Yeah, it's very funny.
Uh-huh.
You know what? There are a lot of different types of programs that are going on. That's the good news. There are just a lot of people who are struggling to make ends meet, whether they're homeless or they have a place to live, but that it's just a place that they put their head at night, or if it's the people that actually have homes but are struggling to keep things together. And there are lots of groups out there like the one you just described, like ours and a lot of other organizations, that are very generously and kindly getting food out into the community. My concern with some of those groups is about food safety,
mm-hmm.
because there are really well-meaning people that really want to help, but food safety has to be at the top of the list.
Absolutely.
As we're concerned, and
yeah.
I do know of a couple of groups that we've heard of over the years where it's just not an issue. They don't think about it. They don't want to know about it because they feel it's too structured when you start to add that into the mix. And it concerns me because, quite frankly, we work really hard to keep this organization going at Island Harvest and working with all the other hunger relief organizations that we work with here on Long Island. And if there's one accident and one person gets sick, it could really affect all of the work that we're all doing.
Mm-hmm.
Food safety is important. And the people that are getting our food, all of ours collectively, have fragile health systems because they're not healthy, because they're not eating well. And most
mm-hmm.
of them, it's not been just a short-term problem. This has become a long-term problem. So their
right.
health is impaired. And, where you and I might eat something that might just give us a stomach ache, for somebody else, put them in the hospital.
Put them in the hospital, right.
So I'm
with you on that because, I have a license for food
of course.
Handling,
mm-hmm.
safety.
Yeah.
And, as much as people don't like to sit through that course, I learn so much.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, I am a chef and I've been in the business, I learn so much.
Right.
And I am crazy when people bring me the turkey. I mean, now, people volunteer and bring me sometimes cooked turkeys already.
Yeah.
And I send with it a food handling guideline and,
yeah.
It can't be overnight defrosting on the counter. It can't be, you know, out all day cooling
right.
and bring it to me, you know, 12 hours later and
yep.
still be good.
Right.
So,
and they're well-meaning.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But there's
and
structure.
Even if you have the law, the you know, Good Samaritan Act, so that we're somewhat protected, who wants to make anyone sick? We're trying to do a good thing.
Exactly.
So I understand, and it is an issue. But I'll tell you, since I've been sending that out, we have not had a problem.
Right. That's the good news.
You know, we have mm-hmm. not had a problem.
Right.
So have you seen the impact of the SNAP cuts yet, or do you think it's too soon for it really to be?
Well, it's a little soon for us, but we have seen it. We have had many conversations with people that are concerned. And, you know, look, people that are living and counting on SNAP support, we're already struggling by the third week of the month. Because it wasn't enough money to begin with to help them. And so with additional cuts, even if it's $10, $10 to somebody who's counting on SNAP benefits is a lot of money. And so it is a heavy burden. We know that our agencies are starting to see we give our food to a network of agencies, nonprofit organizations across Long Island, in addition to the direct service programs that I spoke to you about. And our network right now is well over 500 nonprofit organizations, and we've already heard from them that they're mm-hmm. beginning to see increases in people coming in and wanting to come more frequently.
Yeah.
So,
you like know, I said, I've been doing this, you know, doing the Thanksgiving feast in the park for, I think this is our 19th or 20th year.
Yeah.
And I've never seen the line so long.
Yep.
It was, I mean, we started at 11. We didn't get out of there till like 4.
Wow.
It was... Mm. Huge.
Yeah.
And, you know, and even last year with Hurricane Sandy, this was bigger, you know. So I thought yeah. for sure it had something to do with that.
Well, look, here's the bottom line with it all. Many economists may say that the recession is over or nearing over, but you can't tell that to the people that we're all supporting and serving because they may not be on unemployment anymore. That's because probably some of them who might
They've
have been
cut
making,
off.
Well, they either have been cut off or those who were making six-figure incomes are now working at big box stores making $9 an hour and not able to support their mortgage and their families
right.
on that kind of an income. So, yeah, they're working, but they're incredibly underemployed. So we still have a problem of unemployment and underemployment, and it's had a dramatic impact on our Long Island neighbors and on the communities, and they need our help, and I think that that's part and parcel why you saw such a long line and why we're getting phone calls constantly for people looking for food pantries
mm-hmm.
to go to.
Yeah. yeah. Now, I know you said you work with the Long Island Farm Bureau
yes.
to get produce, and I know you also partner with actual farmers and get
mm-hmm.
direct products from farms as, you know, the Grow a Row, right?
Yeah.
Part of that, Grow a Row for
mm-hmm.
food pantries. Do you have any programs that helps people know how to cook that produce? Because I know I was called in from, you know, I work with Sustainable Long Island, and they had me go to some of their
mm-hmm.
Farmers markets this summer.
Right.
I was at Wyandanch. I was in
Bellport.
I didn't go to that one.
Mm-hmm.
Wyandanch and Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, both of them have these, you know, farmers market, which, you know, by the way, compared to some of the other farmers market, it's like, you know, it's so limited to start with. But I was there cooking, and there were many people that, like, came by, and they were even afraid to taste the food because it was a vegetable that they weren't sure of.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was passing out samples to the kids, and the kids were like, they wanted to try them. I think they were with their grandmother. And she was like, you won't like it. And they said, I want to try it. They tried it. They loved it. And the grandmother couldn't believe it. And she tasted it, too. And so they had an expectation of not liking it. I think it was making vegetable fried rice. So there's lots of vegetables, and they put rice in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I basically do vegetable fried rice or vegetables and noodles. So, you know, and the kids loved it. And I know the kids and the grandmother, they were surprised that they liked it because they don't expect to like vegetables that they didn't think their kids would. There's a preconceived notion that kids aren't going to like vegetables because most of what they're getting are, I don't know, canned or the kinds that are sitting on the, you know, hot steam table for hours at school. So do you have any programs that help them mm-hmm. learn about the vegetables that are being offered and what they can do with them?
Yeah, we really work hard to incorporate nutrition education in all of our programs. So in the fresh fruits and vegetables program that we have for children, we incorporate a lot of healthy eating and recipes for the kids to take home. So when we introduce a new product, even in our mobile food pantries, and actually in most of our programs, if we're introducing a new product, a new vegetable, we will give out a series of recipes so that they know what to do with it. We learned that a long time ago. We had the same story that you have, where people just were afraid to take the product.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of nutrition and dietary interns that work with us, and they put together recipes based on the kind of product we're getting in from the farms or from other sources, so that we could have the full package, the product and the recipes to use.
Great.
Yeah, it's very important.
Yeah,
we do cooking demonstrations as well, and we try to incorporate that with a lot of our outreach programs. Even with our SNAP outreach programs, we've done cooking demonstrations and things. So so that's definitely a strong part of our program.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I think, you know, my experience from being out there was, you know, so many people didn't know what to do with so much of the different food.
Yeah.
So I know I also read on your website that your organization has been a model organization for so many, because so much of your funds that are donated, I'd say, I think 95% or something goes directly to your programs and not to the running of the organization. Can you? We don't have a lot of time, so it has to be quick. but can you share your model that is so extraordinary?
Yeah, I appreciate that. Pearl Kamer was the chief economist for the Long Island Association. She did a study on hunger and island harvest, and she wrote about it. More than 95 cents of every dollar that's contributed supports directly our program and our services. We have a relatively small staff. We depend on donations and contributions. So nearly 100% of our food is donated to us. A lot of our, two of our three facilities are donated. Our fleet of trucks have been donated. And we have a lot of pro bono services. And so all of that enables us to have a really good ratio and a very, very efficient model of running our organization. And so, you know, our staff are, each of our staff are directly involved in program. We don't have a, I don't have a lot of extra staff. I don't have support staff. And so they're directly involved in program. And so that's how we run our business. And we try to teach that model to other nonprofits.
Which is so great, because I know that, you know, so many organizations, you give to them and you know such a small fraction of what you might give actually goes to the program that you want to be supporting. So that's great. So once again, just share with everyone your website and how they can, you know, where they can donate money or volunteer or that kind of thing.
Islandharvest.org is our website, islandharvest.org, O-R-G. And on that website, you could find information about our programs, about hunger, about how to volunteer, and about how to contribute right there on our website. And we certainly welcome phone calls. Our main office is in Mineola, 516-294-8528, and our staff is very knowledgeable about all of our programs and be happy to talk to anybody about any of the questions that they have or forward them to the right person. We welcome input from the community.
Thank you. Yeah, I remember one time someone was calling me. They had, like, I don't know, 10,000 frozen cordon bleus that they had to get out of their freezer. And I was able to call your organization, and they got a truck all the way to New Jersey and picked it up. And, you know, it was just, it was great to just, you know, make that happen and know that that food was not going to get wasted.
Right. Well, thank you for that.
Sure.
Thanks for the friendship. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for joining us, Randy. Everyone out there, thank you so much for listening. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And if you can make it to Hofstra today at 4:30 to 6 for the GMO debate, we need to regulate GMOs more in this country, and we'd love to have you there. Have a great rest of the week, and I'll be with you again next week. Bye for now.